But we grew up in the Churchville area. And so that's a real...
I grew up there, too. Churchville. You name it, I grew up in
it. How about that?
Perryville?
I didn't.
Oh, well.
Aberdeen?
Aberdeen. Yeah, Powell. You didn't go to Powellsville.
Yeah, I lived up there.
Oh, did you go to Powellsville?
I lived up in Delta.
And you went to Haverty Grace?
I went to Haverty Grace, lived with Uncle Frank.
And Perryville?
Perryville. And everywhere Uncle Frank and he just went, they went to Oxford every summer off school.
You went.
You think I wanted to stay on that 900-acre farm?
No, not really.
During the summer?
I often think of that house down at Beta, you know.
Yeah.
You can't see
the
it
old
anymore.
Dairy house. Yeah.
No. You used to live there. Is this thing on?
Well, we wouldn't lie to you. Nobody lied to you.
Keep my mouth shut.
You were just talking, and that's what we really like. So what was it like growing up in Harford County?
Oh,
the
my.
People you met,
wonderful.
The school.
I'd hide behind a tree when somebody came on that farm. I was that bachelor.
What?
There was 900.
I can't believe it.
There was 900 acres in there, and we saw the milkman, the farmhand, and dad and mother, and brother.
Mm-hmm.
We rode the ponies. We played
you
together.
Spin the corn.
And if somebody come in that lane, it was a stranger. I'd run hide behind a tree.
Can't believe that.
Paul Rogers would deliver the groceries to the house. He had a little buckboard. All the people that ordered from that store.
How'd you get to Aberdeen School?
Went on a train from Bell Camp.
Yeah, many people did.
We went down to Bell Camp Station, bought a monthly ticket, and we went 5 days a week to the station, walked from Bell Camp.
How far ahead in school were you?
How far ahead
of
you?
Me.
One grade.
Just one?
Yeah.
When did you drop out?
Well,
you didn't graduate near
out,
me.
I guess.
No, you did not.
I went to Aberdeen School, Harvard Furnish School. I went to Port Deposit School.
Port Deposit?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
But they moved around, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the school that Uncle Frank wanted me to go to was Tome.
Yeah.
And he had the garage in Perryville then.
Did you
Uncle
go to
Frank,
Tome?
I'd rather go out in the car in the garage. Work on cars.
Yeah,
I wouldn't go to college at
home. That was
home.
A good school.
Yeah, that's the reason I say I
know a lot of people went there.
That's where I come up with my idea. I went to Port Deposit School. I never went there. I was supposed to go there, and I stayed out in the garage.
Oh, gosh. You can tell them.
The things that I remember then going to that school, Dad would get us up in the morning. He had a bunch of shoestrings with metal tips. Mm. They were 32 inches long, and he doubled them. He sneaked in one morning, pulled the covers down, and bam, across our bare bottoms. The next morning, we were out of
TV.
Bed.
Yeah.
The next morning, we were out of bed before he could get his foot on the carpet.
Mm.
We knew he was coming because he enjoyed it.
I believe that. He was a nice man.
Yeah, he was nice as he could be. But when he said it's time to get up,
you get
got
up.
The milking to do.
That's right.
We go over and milk the cows. There was 40-some of them in the barn. And they had milkmen too, but we were supposed to do the job.
Sure.
Help. Feed them, get them ready. Too much for one man to do.
Then you thinned the corn down there along the road.
Well, we
in
had
the
to,
summer.
we had to take that milk to the station and then come back and get breakfast.
Yeah,
and then carry our books and our lunch and all the things we needed to school. And that was a 2.5 mile run.
Yeah, I know. I know
I'll
where
tell
it was.
You, it wasn't easy. And Dad said, work will never hurt you.
That's right. Won't.
Yeah. So it never did. Because we got tougher and tougher and tougher until finally I said I had enough of farming. Every summer I'd go to Uncle Frank's and there would be no farm hands there.
Yeah.
I got out of it.
Oh my.
All right, how about, I can keep going.
Hmm?
Or just keep continuing.
Oh, I was going to say about the canning houses back there then. Do you remember them? You were in the canning business.
Dad was in the canning business. Yeah.
We used to haul the corn from Dad's farm over to...
Where'd you haul it to?
Morgan Mitchell's.
Morgan Mitchell's.
Yeah.
Yes, he can.
And Your dad had a canning house?
Yeah, right on Route 7.
And the Osborns had a canning house?
Yes, that's up on 40, outside of Aberdeen.
Yeah.
He was my grandfather.
Yeah, your grandfather.
And uncle.
If there wasn't a relative of yours, there were relatives of dad, wasn't it?
Who? Osborns?
No. If there wasn't one of your relatives, somebody living in the county was dad's relative, because his father had 13 children, and they all married in Harford County except one.
You mean your grandfather?
My grandfather had 13 children.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And all of his children except one married in Harford County.
Yeah, I know.
So I say, if there wasn't your relatives,
yeah,
they were mine.
They were all
or dad's.
Oh, dear me. Well, I lived a little nearer to Aberdeen. I lived at what they call Short Lane, which is where the bypass goes over into the proving ground. And my house, where I was born, is on the proving ground. And I keep going down looking at it because I heard it was going to be torn down. It was a lovely home that my father built for my mother when they married in 1905. And I understood somebody that lived there talked them out of tearing it down. A beautiful home. And the government had to have it during the Second War. But they left him 200 acres along the railroad of ground without a building. No way, you know, to keep anybody there or anything. But he kept on farming then.
Well, it was a beautiful farm. I remember being on it.
Well, he had
how many acres was that when he bought it?
Oh, it was in the family.
Yeah.
There was about 600 acres.
600 acres.
It went on down to the road from Boothby Hill. Boothby Hill was on that road. And just this side of Boothby Hill, there was a road that went from there down, intersected Michaelsville Road, to Perriman. And my father's farms went over there. And strange to say, this was funny for me, I work in a nursing home a lot, not as much as I used to, but I do. And I was over there on Valentine's Day, and they were having a lunch. And the lady in activities came to me, and she said, come sit with this lady. She doesn't have anybody to talk to. And I didn't plan to stay, but I thought, oh, okay. And I went over, and it was a colored lady. And she said to me, I know you. And I said, you do? Well, I don't think I know you. How do you know me? I used to live on Medford Farm. And Medford Farm was the farm back of our home place, going toward Perriman.
And she knew you.
And she knew me.
How
and
old
she's
was
in
she?
That's what I said to her. Ellen, how old are you? Sitting there in a wheelchair. She said, I'm 72. I was 72? What are you doing
that's
where
he started.
In here? Oh, God. 72. And a very intelligent woman, and she knew the pits, and everybody lived on the farm, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was thrilled.
She must have been older.
No, she said was? Not. No.
Yeah.
But she lived there when I was growing up,
mm-hmm.
and then they moved away, of course, after the government took it. They lived over on the Medford farm. And they took that farm, and that was a real shock.
I bet it was.
I still
so
go
many.
To see her when I go in there, and everybody there thinks she's great.
Jerusha was telling me about Pinion up here in Perriman.
Oh, yeah. I spoke to Virginia about he's 101 or 2. I've lost track of his age.
Do you remember the blacksmith shop that used to be in Perriman, the railroad track?
I didn't come to Perriman very much, Frank, except
no, I guess
to vote.
Yeah.
My father had to vote in Perriman.
Yeah.
And we would come down there to the suppers over this McGuigan's store.
Yeah.
They'd have public suppers, you know, you'd go and buy your supper.
Yeah.
And we'd come for that. And of course, I knew all the Mitchells because they came to my church. Wasn't my church then, but later after I was 18, I came back to Aberdeen to church.
There's quite a few Mitchells around here.
Yeah.
And I guess there's quite a few Olivers by now. See that picture on the wall over there?
There's a lot of them.
The one in back of you. That picture over there?
That's
his
family.
That's just my own immediate group.
Quite a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Dad's family, each of those children married someone in the county except one, and that was Aunt Mary. She went to Ohio after she got married. She was the first one that died. Mm-hmm. She was, as I always joked about it, if she stayed in Harvey County, she'd have lived longer.
Oh, but I don't believe that.
Well, you got to believe it.
No, I don't believe that. I think when your time comes, you die.
I went to Cage Cove, and when I went down there was a stack of Olivers in the graveyard down there, and they said the only ones that died were those that left Cage Cove.
Well, sure. They'll tell
they
you
died
anything.
Out young.
Oh.
Got away from the group.
Uh-huh. Well, there were a lot of Mitchells, too, and most of them have passed on.
Yeah.
Not many more. I only had one brother, and he died in 61.
Yeah, I knew him.
Yeah.
I knew him very well.
And my father just had one brother who died the year I was married in 33.
How many of those old folks do you remember around there?
What old folks? The Paxtons?
The old families.
Most of them. Uncle Morgan and his family.
Uncle who?
Morgan Mitchell.
Morgan Mitchell.
His house has been torn down.
Yeah, I knew where he lived.
Yeah.
He had a son named Morgan. Went to school with him.
Yeah. And then cousin Julian, of course.
Julian Mitchell?
Mm-hmm.
I knew
his
him.
Children are still living. And then Ralph Mitchell's gone.
Ralph's gone, yeah.
His wife. And then
now who did
the
they
ones
marry?
At Boothby Hill.
Huh? What families did they marry into? Who was Ralph's wife?
Well, she was
she
a
married.
Sister to Mrs. Aubrey Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they're all gone.
Yeah.
And then the ones down at Boothby Hill, Uncle Tom, you know,
yeah.
And Donald is, and Cousin Silver is his son, and then Donald is up on Paradise Road.
Yeah, I knew Donald.
Donald must be near my age, I'm not real sure. And he has one son.
And you remember
that's
Piggy Andrews?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That was his nickname. His right name was Howard.
Howard Andrews.
Yeah.
He worked in the chain stores.
His daddy had a canning house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Up there on that, what was that road? The road out there would go by.
Which road? I don't remember where he had
they it. Lived outside of Aberdeen.
It wasn't Paradise.
No.
You
go out Paradise Road and turn to the left at the corner. There was a corner, Camp McCann's Corner. Is that out there? Paradise Road.
That's the Aldina Road you're talking
Aldina
about.
Aldina Road.
Yeah.
But Paradise Road is where Howard Andrew lived. You go out to that corner, turn to your left, and his canning house was in there on the road that goes back to the plumbing place. And Slee's had the store there now.
Oh, yeah, I found pictures of that old store.
That old store.
They tore that down. I had a lot of pictures of Aberdeen. I didn't even recognize them. And you know the
George
fire
Slee.
They had?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can remember that fire, and I think it might have been around 14, a little better. And it just lit my bedroom up.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Faced Aberdeen.
That Aberdeen fire, how much it burned a whole block out, didn't it?
Yeah, uh-huh. And that was the Gibson and Hanway's store on the corner.
Yeah.
Remember? If you remember.
Yeah.
And then I was trying to think. See, it was a two-lane road going into Aberdeen, and Smichael's had a filling station on the other corner. And back of there was a bank, and I can't remember the name of the bank. Do you remember that?
No.
And there was a beauty parlor back there, and Fingernails had a bowling alley. You remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Daddy used to go down there and wait for us from school when we were small. See.
Fred Spies, I think
home.
It was. One of the Spieses.
Yeah, I
they sold
the
ice on that road.
Probably did. It was all
and they had a sign on the tree out in front of the house.
Yeah.
Ice for sale.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the kids went along and put L in front of it.
Lice. Oh, God.
They had lice.
Well, the...
And he never took it off.
It was all residential, just a two-lane residential road then.
Yeah, and going from cell camp up to Aberdeen on the old Philadelphia Road, Post Road. They tried to change it a number of times. It's still the old Post Road or Philadelphia Road. There wasn't a bridge there at Stepney. And the husbands had their cannon house there. And the horses would drink the water on the main road into Aberdeen.
Stepney?
Yeah, right there at the where the Wright's Trailer Park is now.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They had a canning house in there. And
see, he's older than I am.
Yeah. Yeah. One grade.
One what?
One grade older.
That doesn't mean anything. I'll tell you why. Because when I was a little girl getting ready for school.
Yeah, I'll tell you this.
My parents thought we should have a private school. I lived out of town. And at my uncle's place over on Route 7, which is still there, they had a private school for Donald,
yeah,
Jack, which is my uncle's son.
For the aristocrats.
Hush up. And Ralph's son, Morgan,
yeah,
and me. And Miss Florence Morgan taught us, yeah, with the idea of keeping us up with the public school so that in a year or whatever we could go to public school. She didn't keep us up. And when we went to public school, I was supposed to go in the third grade. But I didn't make the third grade. They put me back in the first grade and then eventually to the second grade. So I was a year behind.
I'll tell you another thing about you go to the private school, Mrs. Morgan. I was so ornery in Aberdeen school, they kicked me out, and Dad sent me to Mrs. Morgan to teach me.
Well, yes, she was a teacher.
And she had Freddie Baldwin,
yeah,
in there.
Yeah, Freddie Baldwin. Oh, God, he was
And they
another.
Were the worst kids in Aberdeen. And
I'll
tell you the truth.
He was the worst torment.
He was the best ball player, too, in Aberdeen.
Yeah, he was.
And Ben Dever was on the team in Aberdeen.
Yeah,
remember
him. Yeah.
And Aberdeen School was on a dead-end street that we attended. The baseball...
You mean the main school?
The main school.
Which is there now, yeah, built onto. Yeah.
Well,
the street didn't go... It was like... It was called Broadway. It was a dual street with grass plot in the middle. Right?
At the time we were there... The
and Miss Pritchard's house was over, yeah, here, and she used to,
yeah,
feed you snacks at lunch.
Yes, she did. But
oh,
that Route 40 didn't go on into
Aberdeen.
Oh, Avenue
no, no. It went down Post Road and up.
Yeah. So that's why I say that was the dead end.
That's right. That's right.
You got the end of that road.
What was then Halls Cross Roads.
Mm-hmm.
And Aberdeen, and then Mechanicsville was in the northern part of the town.
Yeah. Yeah.
And somebody was talking about Aberdeen, gave a report somewhere I was, and they didn't seem to know that. I was trying to find out who named Aberdeen.
Well, how about the old times when they all hauled out of the forest? Dad logged for a living,
yeah,
farmed for a living.
A lot of people logged.
And all these logs were hauled down Bellcamp Road to the station.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't pull an empty wagon through those tracks in the spring of the year because it was up to the axles.
Oh, yeah.
Those high wheels cut down and cut down.
Yeah, I guess so.
And then they put a hard surface road from the schoolhouse, hard furnace, down to Bellcamp.
Mm-hmm.
That was first Harford County Road that was macadamized, to my knowledge.
And old
I never saw any more around there.
No.
That old...
Old Route 7 was the main road to Baltimore.
Yeah, and that was the old post road.
And
you know how I got that name?
Oh, no, I'm not.
You should know. Clearing off the roads, the trees that they removed coming through the swamps.
Uh-huh.
They cut the post and put the narrow end down so the butt ends would be up. And that surfaced the road. And that's how old post road got started.
Mm-hmm.
The name of
And then
old post
going
road.
Into Aberdeen... And I can't quite see this, but it was. You crossed the railroad,
yeah,
at that last turn and went up,
yeah,
to Halls Cross Roads.
I remember
and
that.
Then later the road was built like it is now.
And off of that same old road at the Ripken store.
Mm-hmm. That was the old road.
Yeah. You made a right-hand turn there instead of going into Aberdeen. And that was the road down into Perryman across.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To the Pursuit Road.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
well, there's roads everywhere.
Yeah. They were paths.
Huh?
They weren't roads.
Yeah.
They were paths. We rode horses on them, and buggies could go through them.
Oh, yeah.
And that highway that they built from Park and Furnish to Bell Camp was only the width of a wagon.
Oh, yeah. A lot of them.
And
pass.
Old Crevison's Hill, which was on Route 40.
Crevison's Hill?
On old Route 7. Yeah. That was up in the forest, and they had logged out of there, and that hill was so steep it takes 6 horses to pull one log up it, and they got it up on top of the hill and loaded it on the wagon. They couldn't take a wagon, it was that steep. So those things have all changed.
Oh mercy, I hope so.
Stein, he manufactured concrete blocks at the top of that hill, Crimson's Hill. And then the Kirklands, they lived in there for Harvard Furnish School, and I don't think people realize that they were one of the wealthiest families in the county.
Yeah, they were.
Jimmy Waltz had his big home over there. He was one of the millionaires.
Mm-hmm. In the and family. The Strasbaughs lived back there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was at Harvard Furnish, and they had a wagon shop there at Harvard Furnish, and a blacksmith shop across the road from it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they're putting the new bridge now.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
They're putting bridges everywhere.
And the old iron mill was there. And when my father's, or my granddad came over, he worked in that iron mill and had a little farm in there
mm-hmm.
called the Lily Place.
Oh, yeah.
On the Lily Farm. And that was a mill back in there, and they named that mill from the Lilly family. It was Lilly's mill, and when he got married, he moved in there. And Brother Charlie, he was married there. Born there.
Yeah, I know he was.
And I was born there. And then he bought the dairy farm.
Yeah.
900 and some acres. $16,000.
Wait a minute. Come back. Your father bought the dairy farm?
Oh, yeah. Yes,
I thought Cousin Morgan owned the dairy farm, and he farmed it for him.
Well, that doesn't say he didn't sell it.
I don't remember that.
Well, Dad bought it from the bank.
Did he? Oh,
yeah.
Great. Well,
and it was
I stand corrected.
And then Dad built the bungalow that's sitting there now that they're using for an office at Riverside.
Uh-huh. I know.
And when he built the bungalow, he moved in it. And then he restored the old brick house,
uh-huh.
And that was the Aquila Hall house.
Yeah, I know.
And they brought the bricks from England.
Mm-hmm. There's a lovely old
rooms
house.
In there were 20x20.
Fireplace in every room.
Had a hallway in the middle, was 20 foot wide, and a double entrance stairways that went
mm-hmm.
upstairs.
Yeah.
And there was 4 rooms on the first floor, and 4 rooms on the second floor, and each room was 20x20, and the hallway was 35 feet wide.
Each room had a fireplace.
Now I'm using the width of the staircase and everything built in it. And you come in the front door and you go out the other side of the house, and there was another front door. So you come in both sides of the house through the front door into the hallway.
Well, they built houses like that then.
That was a reception room.
Mm-hmm.
The second floor, they had another reception room. We rode our bicycles in the attic and raced. Around that attic, it was all
big
boarded.
House. Mm-hmm.
And
I wonder who lives there. Beta owns it
Mrs.
now.
Mrs. Beta? I mean, the
Not
Beta
Mrs.
Shoe. What's
yeah,
this?
Beta Shoe owns it.
Yeah, and her husband bought it. And she lived there. He's dead now.
Yeah, I can't think of her name.
But that house had a bullet hole through the front door, and they say it was put there during the Civil War.
I didn't think there was much fighting around here during the Civil War.
There wasn't. But there was a bullet went through that. That was the history of that door.
Mm-hmm.
They had a hole through the front door and a bullet passed through that door. There might have been a skirmish or something. I have no idea. I wasn't there. But 1600 and something that house was built.
I expect so.
It's in the history of Harford County.
Mm-hmm.
So they could verify that.
Yeah.
The next thing that you might wonder about was that old mill that my mother's daddy used to run at Bush. And he ran the mill there.
Is he the man?
And he, yeah, James Taylor.
Yeah, but...
He was the man that had the tavern.
Mm-hmm.
And when Old Post Road was the main thoroughfare to Philadelphia, that was the stopping place out of Baltimore for the stagecoaches.
Yeah.
One day's run.
Is he the man that came over here, followed his wife over here? Because
oh, no,
they,
that was Dad's.
Who, that was your father's.
Dad's father. Yeah. My grandfather.
Yeah.
Now, there's two stories, and I don't know which is correct. But Dad's father was gone with this McCoy. And the McCoy family didn't want the daughter to marry a farmer.
Well, she was very young, wasn't she?
She was 15 or 16.
Very young.
It happened that they sent her over here to visit the family that they had from England to keep her away from Granddad. And he got on the boat that followed
her over.
Now, that's the way it was told one time.
That's the only way I heard it.
The next story was, and this come from Dad's side of the family, that Dad came over here and located and bought and settled on the Lilly Farm. And when he got over here and got established, he got a letter back to her. And she took over on the boat.
Well, either one family.
came out from Baltimore Harbor on the Maryland-Pennsylvania Railroad to Belair, and had her little satchel and was walking down from Belair to Hartford Furnace. And one of the old local people knew Dad, picked her up.
Oh, God.
Said, "You want a ride, girl?" And she said, "I want to find Mr. Oliver's farm down there at Hartford Furnace." He says, "I'm going right on down there. Jump in." And she came over.
I heard that.
And that's the way they work together. So either story depends on who you talk to.
Yeah.
And that's where she raised her 13 children, right in Hartford Furnace. Two of them died young. But the other 11 grew up and had children, and one of them didn't marry, but Uncle Frank didn't have any children, so I was named after Uncle Frank, and I stayed with him most of the time in the summer. So that
completes
it.
Your mother probably was happy. She had four and getting rid of one.
Oh, my goodness.
Been nice.
Yeah.
I had four, too.
You had four.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
Three boys and one girl was in Dad's immediate family.
Oh.
Your mother had...
My mother only had
two
children. My brother died 61.
Yeah, where did you say four came from? Your family? Your mother, Dad? Which one of those families had four?
Neither one.
Neither one.
My mother was one of three.
One of
three. She had two brothers.
Uh-huh.
She was an Osborne. And Granddad was raised up... what's the name
what
of
else
that?
Would you
what's
like
the name of that road goes off?
Suggest that would be helpful to go down and...
Okay, maybe about some of the occupations you had in working in the county. You said you had many different occupations.
I did.
And maybe just a few of them.
Like when you
and Charlie... I was like going to school. I had quite a few.
Like when you and Charlie were selling cars in Heritage Grace?
Well, I'll
that's
start with
pretty
the,
recent.
Start with the first job. That was farming. Of course, went to school in the meantime. Then come home and farm, go back to school. When they had a fair in Aberdeen, or Blair, we had been used to driving tractors later. Dad had a Fortson tractor and a Moline tractor, and we were running them. 8, 9 years of age. Dad set us up on the seat of the tractor up there in the fairground, and the people were running right and left from it. We were running tractors.
What were you doing? Tractors on the fairground?
Selling them.
Oh, right.
I didn't sell them. In order for them to sell the tractors, he said, "Hey, come on up here, little fellow, and drive this thing." And I was a little skinny boy, put me on a tractor, and we'd run it all over, we'd back it up and turn around. We'd been doing it.
That would be fun.
Yeah, it was fun for us, yeah.
Gosh, why not?
So that was my experience in farming. Well, and a little bit later, I decided I was going to be a mechanic, six cars, and Uncle Frank had the Ford agency.
Mm-hmm.
And I went over to the Ford agency. And that was the time the Ford first started. Yeah,
Perryville.
Mm-hmm. Fords were made the same year I was born, 1906. That was the beginning of their career. And I grew up with a Ford motor. And Uncle Frank had the Ford agency, and I was about 12. I'd be over there laying in the garage underneath of him. He had a mechanic over there that was taught by Ford in the factory. And he was a drifter. He'd never hold a job more than 6 months, and he'd want to go again. And he showed me everything in a Ford you could learn about it, and Uncle Frank kept me in the stock room. And I had to know all the parts to order them, and my memory was good, so I didn't need the stock manual. I could recite them out of my head. And Uncle Frank said the best help he ever had.
How about that?
And that's the time the racetracks was going on in Haverty Grace.
Yeah.
And that's when they built that first toll bridge over.
Over the river.
Susquehanna.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after that toll bridge was, they only had one lane on it. The racetrack was in Haverty Grace. And the cars would go through one way and then hold the traffic the other way. Mm-hmm. So when the last car from the Cecil County end, he would give them a club and give that to the guy on the other end of the bridge, and then that would let the next crowd through. And when his piled up crew driving over the bridge would get through, they'd carry the club back and hand it over to the other fellow. So it was like mm-hmm. a, what's it called, a game where they pass the stick and run.
When did they put
relay
the
race.
Double decker on?
That was in the 30s.
30s.
If I remember right.
Probably. Yeah.
So that then after I got out of that garage, I did 100 things. I sold real silk hose.
You did?
I went down and bought them.
Oh, Mrs. Wheeler sold that for years.
Yeah, I sold real silk hose, and the man down in Balmer said, well, you'll have to come down and take the course in real silk. I said, I live up in Powellsville. I can't go clear down here to Balmer, take a course. I know the people I'm going to show them to. He said, you don't need to pay a train to sell them. Your friends will buy them from you. The merchandise sells itself.
Yeah, it did.
Well, I was doing fine. Mother bought silk coats from me, Aunt Addie bought silk coats from me, all my cousins bought silk coats, and they had men's socks, silk coats. You know what threw me out of the business?
No, I can't.
I went up to Dalton, the lady said, do you have Pointex? And I thought she meant Kotex.
Oh, God.
I should have gotten red in the face. And I said, no, I don't sell those.
Gosh.
And I took my grip back and handed it in when I learned my big blunder. So then I got a job with Mr. Heaps. He had the Ford agency.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Mr. Heaps, I can sell radios if you need a salesman. And the reason I wanted to sell radios because he furnished me a car.
Mm-hmm.
And he furnished me the gas.
Pretty nice.
So, he said the system of selling these at water cans, and they had an area I had to put up, climb a tree, hanging on a house and out to a tree. You put them in the house and let them get used to hearing them for a week. Go back 10 days later, 15 days later, and say, well, I got to take the set out. I got another demonstrator to make at another house. And they said, just leave it there. I like it. So that was the salesman.
You were a salesman too, like Charlie.
Yeah. And instead of climbing the trees, I used to carry a .22 rifle with me. The aerials were strung on a little glass knob to keep them from being short-circuited to the tree. Mm-hmm. Insulators, they called them. I'd take my rifle and shoot the little brass, a little glass knob that held the aerial from the tree to the wire. On each end, I didn't have to go up the tree to climb it. And down the area would come and take and climb another tree and put it up on the next demonstration I made. I run, I think, something like 150 gallon of gas in 2 months.
Mm.
And I sold four radios.
Oh, gosh.
And Mr. Heap said, you know, I can't afford to keep you in bed.
I don't think so.
Because, you know, you'd leave them there 2 weeks, sometimes 10 days. And if they didn't buy them,
well,
I had to take them down and go somewhere else. Well, it didn't take long to burn up all this gas. I was running around at night and going to dances and taking the girls and telling them about the radios.
Naturally.
So he got smart and said, Mr. Oliver, he says, I don't think we can use you anymore.
So then where'd you go?
Well, I decided the only thing I knew then was building a Conowinga Dam. They had big pay. Taylor Pierce, my cousin.
Did you work on the dam like Taylor?
No. He was up there. He was the engineer for it.
Yeah, I know he worked there.
I said, Taylor, can you get me a job down on it? He said, well, I'm in the surveying end right now. And I said, do you need anybody to survey? He said, yeah, come on down. We can use the rodman. And I said, I don't care. I can carry a rod if you want. I don't know what the rod's for, but I can take a rod and carry it. Mm. Well, of course, they surveyed the railroad from Port Deposit to Fishing Creek.
Yeah.
2% grade from Port Deposit. Clear up to Fishing Creek before we come to the top of the dam.
The
water.
Dam. Mm-hmm.
And that dam, when it got to Conowinga, was above the railroad because 2% didn't put it to the breast of the dam. It was at Fishing Creek where the water backed up to before it came level with the 2% grade with Port Deposit. And we worked on that until that job was finished. We lived at Fishing Creek. Kept Batch up there with four other surveyors. And we had a party of four, and there was a boy that had that surveying crew was named Pardee. We had these spyglasses. You could read a map 200, 300 yards. It was that powerful. And the girls used to come down and go over on the island and stay over there in the summer on their vacation, and they would go in swimming in the Susquehanna River off that little island at Fishing Creek, and then we were surveying the highway for the railroad.
Mm.
You can imagine how much surveying.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And they had a little group of girls club over there, and they all used to go in skinny dipping.
Mm.
It didn't take us long to get a rowboat to get to that island, I'll tell you. But
God.
After that job on the surveying was done, then I said, well, I'm going over to see if I can get a job in the powerhouse. So then I went over there in the powerhouse, and they said, well, you go down and talk to the floor, Mr. Lefevre.
Yeah, I knew
you go down three floors. I said, you mean up? I never heard of going down in a building. You go in a building, you go up.
Not always.
Well, at the dam, he says, you got to go down because we don't build above the ground, we build below.
That's right.
So I went down and I talked to Mr. Lefevre. And then he called over Mr. Taylor, who was superintendent. Mr. Lefevre was the assistant superintendent. Roger Taylor was the boss then, big boss. And Mr. Roger Taylor only sent a note out when he was going to have a picnic, a party, or increase in the pay. When somebody's going to get fired, Mr. Lefevre had to send a note out. Mm-hmm. Mr. Lefevre was a bad guy. Mr. Taylor was a good guy.
Is he still living, Mr. Lefevre?
Just about. Yeah, he's in his 90s.
He was the last time.
Yeah, he's up in his 90s.
He lives in Bel Air.
Yeah, out around Hooper's Mill. Now, he might have moved.
I thought he was in the Glenwood area.
He could be now, but he used to live up there around Hooper's Mill.
I think
he's
in the Glenwood area.
And when Conowinga built that dam, then they built a place for the employees to live mm-hmm. up on the hill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they had a commissary up there where we used to, the single boys
mm-hmm.
or men. There wasn't any women down there working then, but they were all men. And we boarded there, and our rent and board, $8 a week. Then it got to $10 a week.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to get three meals a day and come in at night after being out till 10, 11, 12 and raid the icebox, which made our fourth meal. And we're eating more out of that thing at night than we ate all day.
Very likely.
Yeah. And Mr. Taylor said, I don't understand where all that food's going up there. Well, Mrs. Hopkins had her family, and they used to come visit her, and they would eat there. Pretty soon Mrs. Hopkins' family couldn't eat no longer because Mrs. Hopkins didn't work there anymore. And then the food come out. You know, this new lady went in there. She was a dietitian. She was giving us fried eggplants and telling us that was the same as meat.
Yeah, well,
there was no meat.
It's a substitute.
Well, we were used to beef.
Oh, God.
Well, we were eating steaks. We weren't eating
and naturally, fried. Naturally.
Come on, Will. Of course, she didn't get along with the young fellows in that little commissary very long. And we made it so rough on there, I think they would put somebody else in there. By that time, I had moved out and I'd started to Florida.
Oh, yes, that's right, I recall
you. So I had a Model T Ford. Dad had his farm then up at, where was it?
Pennsylvania. I saw that yesterday.
It was above Oxford.
Mm-hmm.
And I had spent the summer up there after left the Conowingo Dam, and I'll tell you the reason I left Conowingo Dam, because it was shipboard. And I was too young to give up two-thirds of my life. You went to work at 3 in the evening, got off at 11.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my life was in the evenings. Mm-hmm. Then we went to work at 11, got off at 7. So I had to come in at 10 o'clock, get dressed, go down to Conowingo to work. I lost my evenings again, going on the 11 o'clock shift. And then when I went on the 11 o'clock shift, I worked till 7, I had to sleep in the day, get up again, go back to work at 11, I lost another 2 weeks of my life.
Too bad.
Then when I came to 7 to 3, that was my beautiful shift, 7 to 3. Then I could start 3 o'clock, get dressed and chase.
And how long were you in Florida? I might as well let you finish and go on with your story. You
well,
a lot of
this doggone story. Down in Florida.
Well,
Uncle Frank
and Edith were down there.
We're down there.
Sure.
So I go down there to visit them. And
where
I started,
was that they stayed?
Sarasota.
Sarasota.
Brooks's
yeah,
County,
that's right.
Sarasota.
I remember.
I had this Model T and $35, and Mother packed the lunch, chicken, hard-boiled eggs.
Yeah, it was always
and
good.
That was enough to carry me for 2 days. So I started south, and I picked up a bum outside of Richmond, or no, this side of Baltimore, the other side of Baltimore, and going into Richmond, I had cousin Carrie Clark.
Yeah.
She was married to Henry Patterson.
Patterson, mm-hmm.
The place to stay overnight was with a relative. Then I got a free night lodging. Mm-hmm. I got free food.
Times were very different then, believe
yeah,
me.
Yeah, they didn't think of a hotel. We could
no,
afford it.
No, there weren't very many of them anyhow.
$35 in my pocket.
Yeah, I guess
to go to Florida
right.
For the winter. So, this bum I picked up was some in his way. He was a young fellow about my age. I called him bum because he didn't have anything. I had a car and $35. I took him in there and we had dinner. I said, it's a friend of mine. So we slept together that night. He ate my chicken, but he took the breast and the thighs and the wings. He wouldn't touch them. And then there was nothing left after the third day but wings. And I ate the wings and I said, I'm sorry you don't like wings, but you haven't eaten them for 3 days. We were going on down south. Came to the watermelon patches in Georgia. Well, the only thing to do was go get a watermelon.
Mm.
I said, how about going out there and find a watermelon? I said, get a nice ripe one. And they planted them with citrus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was out there hitting on them and trying to get a hollow watermelon. And finally the old man that owned the farm saw him out in the field and he came out of the house with a shotgun and me sitting along the road waiting for him to get a watermelon and the farmer cut between me and the guy getting the watermelon and I said, so long.
And you took off.
And that's the last I ever saw of him.
Gosh, poor soul.
And I can see him yet running through that watermelon patch,
so.
And that man with the shotgun after him.
And
I think
he was there on the road again, thumbing another ride again.
But I treated him good as long as I knew him.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got down to into Georgia, I had a flat tire, and this was the end of the story. I had to have a new tire. It cost me $4.50. And I wanted to know where I could take a shower, and he said the barber shop about a block down the road. And I went down to take a shower, and I said, paid the man a quarter. I left my pocketbook on the bench where I dressed.
Mm-hmm.
I had taken out putting my shoe to keep anybody from coming in while I was in the shower bath. I thought they'd come in my pocket to steal, so
yeah.
I hid it in my shoe. So when I put my shoe on, I laid it on the seat. And I went back to pay my bill for the tire. I hit my hip pocket and I turned around, ran out of the garage. He thought I was having a fit. And down to that barber shop, and there it was still laying on the bench.
Oh, gosh.
And my $35 was almost down to 12.
You wouldn't find that now.
Yeah. And from there on, I got to Florida, and then I worked in the garage at a service station for golf. I leased it and ran the service station. And then I met my first wife there. And then we came back to Maryland. And then from there on, you had my history.
I had your history?
Yeah, you knew more about me because you and Charlie got married.
Okay, well.
You got married before we did. We got married in 33.
You got married.
33.
And then I got married.
Oh, yeah.
And you had a daughter, and then I had a daughter. And Taylor had a daughter.
And then I had another daughter.
And I
had
another daughter.
And
Taylor had a son.
And your daughters are?
Same age as your daughter.
Same
January.
Birthday.
Yeah.
Both ways. Sounds crazy.
Your first one was January, and my first one was in June.
June.
And my second one was in January,
and
your
second
one
was in June. Then I had twins.
It's your
And that took care of that.
Yeah, it took care of that. I quit.
You quit?
Yeah.
Mrs. Oliver, can you tell us maybe about some of the happenings in Aberdeen?
Oh, dear, dear.
Like,
well, I went to school in Aberdeen, like Frank did part of the time. My father would take me up to school and
I'm
go and
get a beer.
Go in the bowling alley in Bolton until I was ready to go home. And then I graduated from Aberdeen High. And then he thought I had to have a business course. So I went to Baltimore and took a year's business course, commuted on the train. But that was not my bag. My bag was music. And I started taking piano lessons. Well, the town had a band. And my father's cousin, woman, married a man who worked for the railroad in Wilmington, and he directed the Wilmington band. So they would come down on Friday evening after his work, and I'd get a piano lesson Sunday morning, and then he would direct the band in Aberdeen. And that went on till I learned to play the piano somewhat. And then, well, Aberdeen, of course, changed a lot. Like, no, I don't care for any. Like I say, I had some pictures of the street and I didn't even recognize it because so much of the buildings have been replaced, you know, where the post office was, or is, was all residence, separate houses. And of course, there was a grocery store where the banks are today, the Adams store. And where the firehouse was where the police station is, and there was a grocery store on the corner of that, and those people are deceased now. That was way back. I graduated in 27 from the high school, and then I didn't work, but I was married, his brother and I, in 33. And went to live in Aberdeen, and that same year he went in the business up there with Mr. Wilson, which is now Wilson Oliver Agency Insurance. And I just lived around, have lived there all my life. I have, in later years, I raised a family, always was organist at the church somewhere. I started to play the organ when I was 16. During the winter months, because my aunt and uncle took their son to Florida to get him out of the cold weather. And I was going to Haverty Grace Church. And when she left, of course, I played the piano. I started to take organ lessons from Mr. Baldwin, who then lived in Aberdeen, and played at the Methodist Church in Haverty Grace and directed the choir. But she marked the stops on the organ, and the first Sunday I played, I went by her instruction and then started to take organ lessons and played two winters there. And then Mr. F.O. Mitchell out here at Pearman went to Aberdeen Church, and he came, asked me if I would consider coming out there and play permanently, which I did. And I guess I played there until in the 50s sometime. And of course I had four children. My younger, the only son I had, I must say, the twins were boy and girl. he had rheumatic fever as a child. I know he'd hate to hear that, but we had start taking him to Florida to get him out of the cold so he wouldn't have a relapse. Mm. Then I would go down there, and we bought a house down there just south of Jacksonville. And there was a young man from the University of Florida at Gainesville that came over and played. And when he could come, then I would do all the special services, which was interesting. Even at the lake when they went sunrise at Easter, we'd go out there, and somebody had a little collapsible organ. And you set it up, and you pump with your feet, and regulated the sound with your knees, like a bellows. Mm. That's different. And we stayed down there until the 50s. He went to school down there in the winter until he finished elementary, and then came back, went in school up here. Aberdeen, as I say, the whole front street has changed in the last years. I had a picture of Berman's store. You remember Berman's store, Frank, on
clothing.
The corner, clothing store? And standing out in the street in front of it was Ben Ray, who was the town cop. I had a picture of that.
He rode a motorcycle, too.
I guess he did. He was quite a guy. And then, of course, back of that was Hutner's Restaurant, different things like that. And
Taring had the hardware.
Taring had the hardware. Mm-hmm. And it was just about where the grocery store was.
And they probably had the harness shop.
Adams Grocery was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
His daddy had a harness shop.
Yeah.
And his daddy worked on the railroad.
Taring's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But that.
Well, they were very local.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know. You'd have to almost have pictures of that. As I say, I had some pictures, but I could hardly recognize them. Looking down the street, seeing that old Taring building on the corner, which is now apartment and businesses. It, of course, didn't look the same. It had all houses, which was funny.
Well, you mentioned something about the Aberdeen fire.
Yes.
Maybe you could tell us a few details about that.
Well, see, we were home at the time. I don't recall how it caught fire, but I remember seeing my bedroom, which faced the town at Short Lane, where my home was, and it just lit up the sky, the whole sky. And of course, all that corner burned, where Han Wilson's store was, and on the other side, it was all burned out. And then, as I say, rebuilt like it is today. We used to go down to Adams Grocery Store, which was there in the middle of the block, to get a sandwich at lunchtime from the school, you know.
They were good, too.
And walk back, and Paul Cronin graduated with me.
Did he?
Yes. And he was funny. He'd go out and get his lunch and then rush back to see what we had. If we had anything he liked. He'd always
Paul was always looking for food.
I know. He was a good guy, like Paul.
Marble games was a great day.
Yeah, marble games, yeah.
Marble, man, we
fight over marbles. And every good marble shooter had a great big sack of them, 200, 300, 400 marbles.
Oh, and let me tell you something else before my brain goes flaky on me. Across the railroad, the Pennsylvania Railroad, where those apartments are, was my grandmother and grandfather's home. Very large, nice home, and it was a farm around it. Because the housing corporation, which we called it, when you go 8 Post Road and up, was built after the First War, about, I guess. And then in my uncle's later years, he sold that property, of course, and then they built all those apartments. And I don't know who owns those at all, but it was a lovely area, a nice home. And then, of course, across the street there is the church where we went to church. And then on down Chesapeake Road, which goes into the Proving Ground Road, of course. Well, I lived on that street when I was first married, just below the church.
The old Baldwin property.
No, I lived up on the street.
Oh, I remember there on the right.
Just four houses below the church.
Church.
And then after we had all these four children, we decided we were a little crowded. We had to move.
Yeah. Your brother lived there, too.
My brother lived in the first house.
Yeah.
And so the Baldwin property was for sale, which is the house just below the school going down that street, to East Beller Avenue, actually. And so Charlie contracted to buy that house for the mortgage.
From the bank?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he consulted Mr. Parker Mitchell and several about it, because we were young, no money, please. Mm-hmm. And we moved down there, and that's where we lived until 65. And then we sold it. Someone came along, and he just had to have that house. So we sold it, moved to Harvey Grace, and lived up on Maryland Avenue in the Heights.
That house had 13 acres in it, didn't it?
Something like that.
12, 13.
And it was a blessing we moved. It was all the children were married there.
Yep.
Except Charlie. And of course he didn't get married until he was in his early 30s. And then, of course, it was too big for us. And we had a nice house on Maryland Avenue up there in the Heights, which I dearly loved.
How old were you when you got married?
We were married in 33, weren't we?
Yeah. When were you born?
I have to count.
When were you born?
I was born in 1908.
And I was born in 1906.
Mm-hmm.
And this is 1986. So
I'll be 78.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
You've been caught and trapped.
I know.
Well,
I was trying to think. I was married in 33. So that was May 25.
Yeah. And I was 26 when I got married. And I was born in 1906.
And Charlie was, he was born in 5.
And the first marriage, I had my two daughters, Lois and Nancy.
Yeah.
And then we married Ruby Preston.
Yeah.
And she had a son.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Michael. And her first husband was Todd Felder.
Who's going to hear this mess?
Anybody who wants to listen.
I'm not really sure.
Oh my
no,
God.
Anyway. Then, when Ruby and I met, I was selling life insurance.
Yeah, I know.
And I started selling life insurance back there in 1935 or 34.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had a filling station in Baltimore for a while.
I had one in Baltimore, I had one in Towson.
Yeah, I know that.
And then I met insurance men coming into the gas station. I said, if you were going to put your son to business, what business would you put him in? Almost all the insurance men said, a life insurance business.
If they can sell. You know people can't sell.
I know people can't sell.
Not worth a darn.
And I was running the gas station then. They had one in Towson, one in Baltimore. They were the only ones coming in there on the weekends getting ready to go places and enjoy life. All dressed up, driving the pretty cars. I asked a man in the bank, what would you do if your son wanted to go into business? He said, never in a bank. I ask everybody I was dealing with, what would you do if your son was going to visit? He said, wouldn't be in this racket. I had many fumigators.
That's terrible.
Bug killers.
Is that your car?
And it ended up that I met a man and he said, best thing to work.
That's Short Lane, which is 2 miles south of Aberdeen. Jerusha Mitchell. And went to school in Aberdeen, graduated from high school, 1927. And then my father thought I should go to business school, which was not my line at all, but I did commute by B&O to Baltimore and took a business course in 28. I did not work except for playing the church organ. From the time I was 16, I was a church organist, first in Havre Grace Presbyterian Church, and then when I was 18, I came to Grove Presbyterian in Aberdeen. And that was at the corner of Hall's Crossroads. And I played there all through my married life. But in the meantime, going to school in Aberdeen, there were many changes. Of course, the Aberdeen fire was 1918 when I was very young, but I could see the blaze in my home bedroom window. And rebuilding of stores. And Route 7, which is now Route 7, came to the stoplight in Aberdeen, crossed over the Pennsylvania Railroad to the corner where Halls Cross Roads was, and went out Post Road to Swan Creek, back over the railroad bridge, and what is now Route 40 to Haverty Grace. That was the main road. From the traffic light in Aberdeen, north, it was a dual road with a grass plot in the center, and the school was up that street. Not used today, of course, but the large brick building was where I went to school. And the telephone company was on that same street going north on the left-hand side in the middle.
I remember that.
Yes, I do
too. I remember
too.
It well.
And on the corner was a filling station, and then down that side street was a bowling alley. I remember when Fingernails had the bowling alley.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a bank called the Harford Bank, they tell me, and a beauty shop. And at one time there was a dry goods store over there, Hanway's.
Yeah, you remember the bakery?
Well, the bakery was up on the other side of the street. And I remember when Adams had the grocery store about where the bank, present Harford is now. And then Tarring's had a big hardware next to it. And then Ivan's drugstore. And at one time there was an Acme in there. Just north of Iden's, where the stationery store is.
Howard Andrews was manager.
Howard was manager there.
Howard Andrews.
And then it was all housing from there up to the corner where Willard Tarring had the building that now stands.
Baker had the big home.
To
remember that one?
Where?
Baker's home. Just above. Well.
Oh, that was above the B&O.
No.
Baker's?
Yeah.
I remember the Hanley home on the corner of Rogers and Belair Avenue, where Conley later lived, and it was torn down for the drive-in bank, which is there now. I have a picture of that. I have a picture of Charlie driving Mr. Cronin, Dr. Cronin, in his carriage to make a deposit at the bank.
The bank?
At the new bank. Well, that brings us too far to date, I'm
sure. That's quite all right.
Then across the street, I remember the fire department being, but Williams had a, Frank Williams had a grocery store right on the corner. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And then the fire department. I have a picture of that. And then coming down the street again to the present stoplight, there was Baker's stockbroker, wasn't he? They had an office there. And then the bakery.
Mm-hmm.
And then later there was a grocery store on that side where Getz and Pyle, I think, opened together. And then Edel's has never changed. But the present bank was rebuilt, of course. And as I said, Berman's was across Howard Street, going toward 340. And they had a big store there alongside of Huttner's, which is the building still there. Then coming down to the Pennsylvania Railroad, there was a house, a big residential home, where James's lived years ago. And that
that's where
Bill
the Cooper's
James.
Were raised.
Cooper's? I don't recall. No, that must have been over the railroad.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side.
Could have been. One of their
because
homes.
Because their house was right beside the Pennsylvania Railroad. And then when James's moved, you know, that was Bill James's family. And when they moved, Hinders bought it.
Did he have horse business? Rental of horses? James?
James? They have, because barns
barn there.
There.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And after they moved, the Hinder family moved in there, who were the present auto dealers.
Yeah, the gang of those Hinders.
Uh-huh. And then on the other side of the railroad, Mr. Strasbaugh had a, Harry Strasbaugh, little office back there.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember. I know.
A broker, too, I think.
Yeah.
And then the rest was all residential down to the corner, and the Catholics owned that corner where the apartment house is now. Ask me something.
All right. You're talking since you about the outlays of the streets. Do you remember about the old churches that used to be there?
Oh, yeah.
And some of
yes, I have a picture of in that book I showed you of the Methodist Church when they were, of course, where they are today. But the manse was torn down and they rebuilt, naturally. I see what else. Of course, the Grace Church South up by the B&O Railroad still stands. It was Methodist. And the Lutherans met there for a while, then they rebuilt out on that Royal Avenue. And what is in there now? It's the Church of God or something, I believe. That was about all the churches there were.
Ross Wilson Oliver.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually about all the churches there were in town.
And your Grove, was it over there?
Grove is down where it is today.
Yeah.
Still there.
That was there.
Yeah. Well, first they met in the, had a chapel in the cemetery, and then they later built down on the corner where they are today, and of course they've added the education building and all that mess since then. So.
Well, about your school, since you both did go part of the time to Aberdeen, do you remember any of the courses or what the teachers were like when you were there?
Oh, yes. I remember Mr. Freeze, and he went to Florida later to live. I don't even know if he's still living. I can't recall who was before him.
I don't remember either. I didn't go there at that time.
Of course, Mr. Wright taught there at one time.
Yeah, Mr. Wright.
But that was before my time, too. And then there was a little school at Boothby Hill where my father went. Just one room. Of course, I didn't go. And prior to the time I entered school, living 2 miles out of town, having a lot of relatives around, they decided to open a little private school at my uncle's house, which is on Route 7 still, coming up. So there were five of us went there, and the Morgan taught us, with the idea of keeping us up with the public school. But we went there 2 years, I did, and then they sent me to public school in Aberdeen. Of course, I was supposed to be ready for the third grade, but I wasn't. So they put me in the first grade, and more Miss Helen Crone was still teaching.
I remember her.
Or was teaching. She was young then. And I was a little too far advanced for that, so I went to the second grade. But I was old enough to be in the third grade. So I was a year behind all my age. But
you
I
remember
did
remember that
continue.
Little satchel you used to carry your books in made out of
no.
carpet? I thought it was.
It could have been,
prettiest
I don't
thing.
Know. My father used to take me back and forth.
Yeah.
And then later, Mr. Bradford, Mr. George Bradford, came to live with us, and he drove the car. First he took me in a buggy. Horse and buggy, and then he later drove a car and he picked me up until I was able to drive. And then my brother was 5 years younger than I, and when I was able to drive, my father got me a car, and I drove back and forth to Aberdeen. Big deal. And as I said, I graduated in 27, so it was quite an experience. Yes, we had what did we have? Well, of course, the usual things, English and arithmetic, and just everything you learn in school. French, Latin.
Geography.
Geography.
Yeah.
And I used to be so provoked when my children came, and they didn't have geography. My
history.
They just learned history. Well, and they learned about Maryland.
Yeah.
And at the time, of course, this is much later, I shouldn't probably get into that, but my son, we took him south, and he and my youngest daughter were twins, and we take them south for the winter to get him out of the cold, because he had rheumatic fever. And down there, he was studying geography, and I could not understand why in Maryland we didn't study geography. Only Maryland. So finally I got around to asking somebody that knew, and they said, but we have everything. We have the mountains, we have the seashore, we have everything the whole country has. That didn't seem reasonable to me.
You didn't have to worry about the rest of the world.
I know. But he studied geography, of course, in Florida, which pleased me very much. Where have I left off?
Maybe both of you can talk about what you did in your free time, then, like your social life school.
Can
and
do
those
plenty things. Of that, I'm sure.
Well, that's what we like to hear about. What it was like growing up there. You know,
well,
I guess the dances or the activities.
Yes,
or just your free time.
Bel Air for dances, of course. We did have
the
a hall.
Armory over Blair.
Yeah, an armory. But we had a hall on Post Road, which is now an apartments. And my parents always took me.
You remember the
young.
Dance hall that was out here on the road, Carson's Run? I mean that.
No. The one on the road, Post Road, up by Howard Grace, we used to go there all the time for dances. And when I was in, and I tried to remember, but my memory fails me a little. When I was in high school, I was pianist for everything. It was the center of my life. And we had an orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go around and play for dances. Strange, but it was true. I was almost ready to graduate then.
Not with your mother's approval, was it?
Oh, yes.
Did she mind?
Sure, she didn't care.
Did she?
Oh, she didn't care. Yeah. But it was fun. And we had about a 5-piece orchestra. One of the boys played, he's deceased now, and Nelson Mitchell was in it, and he's on California living. And I was trying to think who else it were. We had a lot of fun. And Mother and Dad would take me to these dances down here. I can't think of the name of that building. And I enjoyed that. I was a teenager then.
There
and,
was the dance.
And all their friends used to dance with me, and that would tickle me to death.
The dance hall that set out
I
on the right.
That would, oh, yes, I know where you mean.
Yeah.
Up Harbison's.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was one
That's
of the
one.
Wild ones in 90s.
We went
they'd
there.
Have parties there, yeah?
Yeah.
big dance
floor. In fact, I think they had a party for me there one time, right on the corner of...
And every once in a while they'd throw in a square dance and none of the youngsters...
No, nobody liked that. That was the road going to...
Stepney Aldana Road.
Stepney Aldana.
Right on the corner.
Right there. It was just a bungalow, that's what it was. It wasn't
a
big hall.
Yeah, opened the hall up and made a dance floor out of it.
That was fun. And what else?
How about your trips to Betterton on the boat from Haverty Grace?
Oh, my, yes. I used to. That's where I had my first date with your brother.
Was it?
Yeah. The moonlights. Oh, gosh, that was funny.
We used to hide the bottle of rum or whiskey or beer.
Now, you would get into that.
Yeah.
I didn't mention, I never had any of that.
They'd search
strike
us.
It out.
They'd search us before we get on the boat.
No.
They'd feel us here and here and here
and
here.
No, I never remember
And
that.
We used to tie the bottle in our belt in back of us.
Right, how awful.
And carried on the boat. Well, I'll tell you one thing, when we got down to Betterton, we were ready to dance.
Oh, we had such a good time. The boat, that boat came out of Baltimore. And they'd pick us
Emma
up.
Emma Giles.
Yeah, pick us up in Harvey Grace.
Started at Port Deposit. Started
and,
up port.
We'd dance over there and then come home at midnight. Yes, I had the first date with Charlie on there.
Mm-hmm.
That was my husband.
Oh, yeah.
His brother.
Well, a lot of stags used
so
to go
fun.
Down on it. And it was this girls on there, well, they'd always find one before the night was over.
Oh, yeah.
There was girls and their mothers and dads, and a lot of them went on.
It wasn't far over the bay. And when Dad had a boat, or even when we had boats in later years, we would go to the stars if we didn't know. I remember one night you got all fouled up with the radio and couldn't get off the bay. You remember that?
Yes, I do.
But that's how we would navigate.
The story that night was...
By stars.
That Doc Scholl was on the party with us, and he liked to run my boat. So I
that
put it
terrible.
On
I thought I'd never get home.
Compass reading 30. And compass reading from where we were in that...
We just went up and down the bay.
Well, I'll tell you, it came up a storm. It got dark. There was no skies that you could see, no stars you could see. And he went back and got his radio and put it beside the compass. Well, the compass made a reverse.
Yeah.
All
the way around. By the radio.
And he was driving 130. According to the compass, he was going up the bay instead of across the bay.
We just went up and down.
It got so pitch dark, all we had was lights on the shore, and the storm kept coming up.
That was really something.
And the waves began to grow, and then the rain started, and we had to call up the Coast Guard, and we couldn't get them.
Get us off the bay.
Because my aerial, I had gone under the bridge. It broke the aerial off, and we couldn't raise the Coast Guard.
I tell you, Frank, traveling with you was a disaster.
I always enjoyed it. But anyway,
Somebody
said if we had a longer aerial, we could raise a Coast Guard. Well, I said the top of the aerial's down in the base of the boat. So we got it out and wired it on, and we raised the Coast Guard. In the meantime, they had changed all of those buoys up and down the river.
Yeah.
So we called the Coast Guard and he said, where are you? In Chesapeake Bay. At buoy number so-and-so. It was right off of Betterton. Well, they said, stand by. And I couldn't shut the motor down because I was in the ship channel. So we circled that buoy and we circled that buoy and we circled that buoy and about 30 minutes later, it came back. He said, what body of water are you in? We can't locate you in the Chesapeake Bay. I said, we're in the Chesapeake Bay, and we're at buoy number so-and-so, and I gave him the A number and the number with it. They looked and looked and looked, and finally they found it, and it took them about an hour.
Well, we got home by 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
Oh, so my golly, I know.
From that point on, we could come on
babysitters.
Down, and it took us about 30 minutes to get home. When we got the number of the boys. So one of the boys laying in the front of the boat, that was, I think we told the other day, he said, there's only one thing I want, and that was Broadway and 25th or 35th Street in New York. That's the only thing I want.
Oh,
But I'll tell you another thing about that boat. It was just short enough to go down in front of the wave, 34 foot. And when it got down in front of the wave, it would splash over the top and run down the roof, and everybody on the boat thought the thing would sink. It would be seaworthy enough, but the next wave would be down in front of it. And then it would splash it all over the top of the boat and come down the stern of it.
I don't remember if anybody got seasick.
No.
I never did.
They just had an exciting evening. And when you go out in the boat, if you don't have a little excitement, you haven't had any fun.
But some people had babysitters. Oh,
yeah.
My God, they were worried to death.
The babysitter was calling up, and finally somebody called the Coast Guard, and they told the babysitters they have reached the Coast Guard. They're on the way in, and everybody's okay. So we got in about 6:45. Some of the people on there went in, changed their clothes, went to work. It had to
That's
be
a
work
night
at
on
7.
The bay.
That was Chesapeake Bay night. And we've had a good many thrills on that bay.
What else? What else are you interested in?
How about the...
I didn't tell you about our canning business, which started out to be my grandfather's and his brother's, and then my uncle and my father went in. And we're in it until the Proving Ground took all the land. And then what he had left, he farmed and canned with someone else. My son has all those records.
I was going to say, how about the cures we used to use for poison oak?
The cures?
Yeah.
No, I didn't get poisoned but once.
We used jewel weed.
Jewel weed?
Jewel weed. And the sap out of that jewel weed, do you know what it is?
No.
I'm not sure. I know the poison oak and poison ivy, but...
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with
jewelweed would take away poison oak, and it was a little sappy stem that was real brittle with juice, and it grew in the wetlands along the woods where it was shade, and that constant shade and that moisture, that jewelweed just sapped up that juice. Mm-hmm. And if you got poison oak, you could get that little jewelweed and break it and rub that sap on your hands, on your body, and that was one of the cures. Tell you
another. I never had poison but once.
Cure.
Just one time.
I learned in the Army. A boy in there had athlete's foot. Both feet. And this fellow from down south, he told him. He said, I can cure that athlete's foot. You have feet. He said, I'll give you anything you ask me if you could cure it, because I've been suffering with it for months and months. He said, well, get some good apple cider. A good heavy pair of socks and put on your high top boots. We were in the Army then. And he said, dump this apple cider in your boots and go on a hike. Well, the guy did it. And we got back off of that hike, took his stockings off, and the skin peeled off. I thought he was going to be a cripple for life. All the skin come off and the athlete's foot disappeared. And it poisoned it in his shoes at the same time. So he could put his shoes back on, it didn't return.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, I wouldn't think
so that was two of the cures that I learned from healing people.
How about that?
And I found out that milkweed take off warts, somebody told me, the old timers. Now, you don't believe that? You try it.
Well, I have to.
The sap of that milkweed, you put it on that wart and it'll go away.
Never heard of that. Never had warts either.
No, you never heard of that?
No.
And I was down in
never did.
Ocean City, and this come up later. Dr. Myers from Harvey Grace, was dentist in Aberdeen.
Yes. Mm-hmm. His wife was a cousin of mine.
Yeah. Well, I was out on a little rowboat at Ocean City in the lake in the back, crabbing all day, and he had visited Alice and Paul Latka, and he saw me come in. My back was as red, your hair redder. He said, Frank, if you want to sleep tonight, you go down to the drugstore and get some ST-37. Now, I don't know what ST-37 meant, but I went down and got it. And Ruby put it all over my back and just sopped it on. And it drew the heat out of that poison oak, and I never knew I had poison. Mm-hmm. I mean, not poison oak, sunburn. Mm-hmm. That sunburn just cleared it out, and it, I could actually feel the heat coming out of my back. Mm-hmm. And when I was younger at home on the farm, I'd had scarlet fever when I was little, and we were all, my brother didn't get it, he was outside, lived at the dairy farm. I got the scarlet fever, and they quarantined everybody had scarlet fever, and kept them in the room to themselves, wouldn't let the rest of the family. All the dishes came in.
I had that, and everything was carried in.
Everything was carried in.
Inside the door.
And I was there for so long, I just said...
3 weeks.
Yeah, 3 weeks.
That's what it was. 3 weeks.
I said, go get Wax. That was their dog. Oh. And Charlie sneaked Wax in the window, in the bedroom, and I had Wax in the bed with me.
Oh, gosh. Wonder it didn't kill the dog.
After
what a night
that,
of quarantine, but
yeah.
In two rooms down that big house.
After that, to clear it up, Dad put me out on a hayway, and it was in the spring of the year, and my body was just as cream and white as it could be, and I took my shirt off, and I had these little short pants, and I sat on that hay rake all day. And when I came home that night, these poison from that sun swelled my legs up till I couldn't walk. And I was wishing then, I wish since then I knew about ST-37. Because they had poultices on me all over, kept them wet, poultices. Took them a week or so longer to get that poison element from the sun.
What else would you like to talk about?
We
sort of branched off into other things.
Well, that was one of the things that I think that people had forgotten about, some
I'm
of those
sure
old
they
cures.
Mm-hmm. Sure they have.
So I don't have too many of those cures. Mm-hmm. I use Vaseline every time I get a stiff joint.
Vaseline.
Vaseline on elbows.
For you, sure.
And Dr. Down Ballmer, one of the best doctors in the country, he was going to pump some cortisone in my joints. He said, your joints need lubrication. Dr. Levin, and he was a good doctor. And I said, well, how about Vaseline? He said, go home and try it. Nothing beats trial but a failure. And I rubbed Vaseline on it, and the stiffness out of my joints. I couldn't raise my arm. And one of the boys said, well, I could never get my arm up that high, and that was about even with his chest. And he said, I took this cure, and he said, then I could raise it like that.
You never know. We know the old-time people, they used all kinds of home cures.
Yeah.
They didn't have
turpentine's good.
Medication. Turpentine's great.
Turpentine's a good cure.
If you cut yourself or anything, you never have any pain.
Alcohol's a good cure, too, if you take it right.
You would think of that.
And
it's time to go back to where we left off.
Off the cures.
Well, I got married in 33, married his brother, and we moved to Aberdeen, four doors below my church, where I was playing at the time for Sunday services and all the special ones. Then Carolyn was born, 35, and Gertrude, 30. Well, Carolyn was born in January, Gertrude was born in 36 in June, I guess the day before one of yours.
Yeah, every time they had one, we had one.
Yeah, my twins came along in 39, boy and girl, so we sort of outgrew the house.
Yeah, and that's when I quit having children, when they put two out at the time. I said, I'm not
that's
following
them
anymore.
That's when I quit, too. I thought that was enough. Did want the boy. That's my son sitting up there on the piano. And I was happy. I had three girls. And finally got that boy. And then we bought the Baldwin house down on East Beller Avenue by the Halls Crossroads School now. And we lived down there until the three girls were married. And somebody came along and said, I want to buy your house. I said, great, to myself. I don't want this big house anymore. Because Mr. and Ms. Oliver lived in the apartment on the back of our house. It was great having all the family come there. I really grew to know them all, which I haven't seen many of them now, but that was wonderful. And it was just my son left, and it didn't look like he was going to get married soon. So we moved from there and went up into Haverty Grace, up in the Heights.
Did you mention he was a twin?
Yeah, he and my youngest daughter were twins. And they were born in 39. Well, then we lived in Haverty Grace 5 years, and my husband died in 70. And I stayed 3 more. It was a nice house, and I loved it. But Charlie lived out here in the apartment up on the Barkus farm. And he bought a house up on Patterson Mill Road, I'm sorry. So he said, Mother, I think it's time for you to move and come take the apartment, which I did. And I lived there until...
It was a lovely apartment.
Oh, I loved that apartment.
Yeah.
Until, what's his name?
Livesey?
No. I didn't think the man's name now. Came and bought half the farm, and that's when I moved here. So I moved about 4 times. Here, there, and the other place. In the meantime, the year before Charlie died, his twin, my youngest daughter, died. And she had married and gone. Her husband was a doctor in Memphis. And of course she'd gone out there to live about 1,100 miles. And she had her third child, which was a boy who was now 17. And she had an aneurysm in the brain, which she'd had for many, many years as a very small child. She had terrible headaches and couldn't seem to find any cure. And when she married Frank, being a doctor, I thought, oh, she's safe now. But he never could find out what caused it, and it was a weak blood vessel in the brain. So then I had been doing volunteer work. I never worked out my family, my church, and my music was my life. But I'd been doing volunteer work in the hospital, and they took us off the floor, not waiting on the patients anymore, and put me down the laundry, brushing, you know, dust off sheets and stuff. And so they had built the nursing home at that time, Citizens. And they had established a guild for people interested. So I took myself down and joined the guild. And I knew the president of the guild. And the summer after my daughter died, I found out later that Charlie had spoken to the president of the guild, whom we both knew, she and her husband, and asked her to give me a job. He didn't think I had enough to do. So she asked me to start the volunteer program for the nursing home. I didn't know it, but I did it. And I worked, sometimes starting it, not knowing where to get volunteers. I'd try every method, mostly through the churches. But some weeks I'd work 4 days a week on the floor. At that time there was only 70 rooms. So it wasn't too large, but now there's 200. Mm-hmm. And I worked at that for 10 years. And then, that was about 79, 80, I guess. So they decided they wanted somebody full time to pay them and do other things. They replaced me. Mm-hmm. But I've continued working. I've always worked, and now I work the TAP program once a month. A month, sometimes twice a month. They call me if they don't have anybody. That is a telephone assurance program where elderly people live alone, put their name on, and you call to know if they're all right. If you can't get them, you have a neighbor or somebody, and if you can't get anybody, the police goes out to find out how they are. That's the TAP program. So I'm still on that. But I don't work on the floor anymore. And I played for the Sunday service for years and years. I was also on the Salvation Army board, Haverty Grace, for the county for 12 years. So I've had a little busy life.
You might mention, Mac, that Charlie was instigated, I think, in that hospital over in Haverty Grace when they started.
My Charlie? No, I don't think so.
Well, his name was on that board of directors over there.
No, he was never on the board that I know of.
How about the bank down here in Aberdeen?
Well, Charlie was in all those things.
Didn't he organize that bank?
He was in the Harford yeah. National. Yeah. He was never on the First National or Equitable Trust. He helped organize the Harford National. Yeah. He did a lot of things. You want to hear about that?
He was never still.
No, he was a salesman foremost, and he loved people. If you went in his office and he had the busiest day in the world, and you said, Charlie, can I talk to you a minute? Are you busy? No, come right in. And you knew, I would know he was so busy. But he was a grand person.
He was getting ready to go boating, wasn't he, the night that he had his heart attack?
He had been to Northeast and had supper on the boat, and we're going out for the weekend. We're taking the Lizzies and her son and somebody else with us. And we got home, and on the way home, he really hadn't completely retired. Young Charlie was in the business. I think he was satisfied that Charlie could run the business at that time. That was since it'll be the 7th of August since he died. So he said, I think I'll take more time off. But he loved to work. He loved his work. I said, well, that would be great, because we went to Florida on the boat. We'd take it down in the fall and go down and stay on it a while and then come back, bring it up in the spring. I found pictures that we had Deb and George Adams with us. And she had said to me, oh, my, I'd like to have some of those pictures. And I actually found the negatives. I couldn't believe it. And I had them developed for her the other day, took them down to her. But we got home, we had her supper and everything, and he just had a heart attack. Mm-hmm. And that was it.
I was told, I don't know for sure, I never mentioned it to you, but he got his first Social Security check and never spent it, did he?
I don't know.
And they had to return it to the government. So he was 65.
65. He was 65.
And when he reached 65, he got his Social Security.
He was 65 in January.
Yeah.
I don't know. He was born, is that right? He was born in 5.
Yeah.
I guess that's right.
Anyway, when the check came,
he died
it was found in his desk.
I don't remember
after
that.
His death.
I don't remember that.
And I don't know who told me, but they said when he got his first Social Security check, he never spent it.
I don't know. He loved his work, I know. He didn't want to retire. He said he always wanted too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Too much ambition. Oh, me.
Well, it's no fun stopping.
No, it sure isn't. Unless, of course, he had a hobby. He loved his boat. And we did a lot on the boat, and it was a nice boat. We had had 10. Can you believe that? We started with an inboard, a Ventnor inboard.
Yeah. Robert's
That's
got one
with
now.
The boat, with the motor in the boat.
Yeah, Robert's got one of the Ventnors.
Does he?
Mm-hmm.
And the last inboard we had, Charlie has down on the Bush River, you know.
Yeah.
I gave it to him finally. And he fixed it up, and they ski behind it.
That big boat that you had was one of 5.
Yes, that's all there were.
And one went to Italy?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And we docked in on Johns River at Jacksonville. And one winter, there was one parked right across the marina from us.
Mm-hmm. Same?
Same thing. Uh-huh. It was a nice boat. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of fun.
At that time, those boats were engineered to sell for
$75,000. But another thing, they weren't completely, you know, they had to make a lot of changes in them because they weren't sure
and
how it was going to work.
It
that was funny.
It cost the firm $125,000 to put them out because the engineers had misjudged on
well,
the
Well, we paid, I think, $64,000.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it cost them $125,000 because they were experimenting with this new style of boat. It was a beautiful thing. And when it was completed, they had $125,000 and they quit building those large boats after
that. And they had to do so much to them after. This is if you can see it.
Oh, I can see it.
This my granddaughter, great granddaughter did, so I stuck it in there to keep it.
It's quite a nice boat.
Yeah, it had stateroom and then
a stateroom.
Oh yeah, big cross this end, and then a galley here, and then not a galley.
You had a bar on the back deck. You could go to the bar.
Then opposite this was a small stateroom, and then it was sleeping quarters in the bow. And another, that's not what you call it.
In the bow.
Restroom.
Head.
A head. I couldn't think what you call it. The galley and all is up in the salon. We went back and forth to Florida a number of years. I don't even know how many years. I'd love to go again. Take your boat, Frank, and let's go to Florida.
I'm willing.
I'd love to see
it. And Ruby's not.
Oh, I'd just love to go. I just love it. To see the changes on the waterway. Absolutely terrific.
Yeah, that was a boat of the day. And it would move too. It was fast, but they had put two V8s, and they were smaller motors than they were supposed to be. And they revved them up so fast that it was underpowered, and it would burn the motors up to run them.
This was long.